Session number 761.
This is M. Stevens, Reel 1.
Yes, I was about 12 years and say 9 months old when the war broke out, and we lived at that time in Pomerania, in Stettin, and our school was taken over by troops, which, looking back now, I presume was the build-up towards the campaign in Poland. And I remember we had a day off, and we came home and were very pleased about this. And my father was posted into Austria. I imagine it was 1940, and as he belonged to the police force in Germany. And my parents were then decided then to move into Austria in 1941 when his appointment became permanent. I remember being very thrilled because it was such a long way and step from northern Germany into a country with mountains and nice and beautiful scenery. In fact, we went to Carinthia. And I remember, too, my mother being very unhappy because she felt it was such a step from a very sort of northern German family into the Austrians, very south of Austria, with people being much gayer, and the language dialect was different. And the next thing I really recall was that war was on, and I remember we had to move down into Austria, and my parents had to leave all their furniture behind because it was a matter of finding a flat and somewhere to live. And as it happened, by then my father had very good friends, and we moved into their house, took over the flat upstairs, and the furniture was still left in Stettin. So my father's appointment, I believe, in 41 became final, and we all thought, well, we were here for good. So the point was to get the furniture back from Stettin. I remember a sealed wagon of furniture arriving with all our belongings in Krumpendorf, and it had to be stored till actually the flat was rebuilt, was ready for us. My sister went, she's 9 years younger than I, went to the local school, a village school, and she was terribly thrilled because in the winter she could ski to school. And I went to Klagenfurt, and this is really how my war diary started, because having to join this school, I felt very much out of place, because my friends all spoke a dialect. They only spoke proper German, as they called it, when they were sort of asked to in lessons. I had learned English as the first language, but in Klagenfurt, the first language was French. And because so many people, I should say, were four or five of us, had moved into Austria for one reason or another, being the Great Germany, Groß Deutsche Reich, as they called it, a special class was formed, and so we could carry on with our English lessons at that particular stage, but we had to join the French class as well.
Wasn't the English frowned upon, the teaching of English?
No, English was the second foreign language taught at the time. And so they had to maintain the special class because we had already reached about 4 years of English, and the others were just starting the first year of English. But we had to sort of fit into the French classes, and they started sort of elementary French with us as well. And we had Latin later on. It was a grammar school. And our teachers were, to me, looked very old and very sort of Austrian-Hungarian in a way, because I remember the Latin teacher came from Yugoslavia and had a very, very sort of formal Austrian manners and ways of speaking, whereas in Germany, northern Germany, we were all very used to very young teachers, younger teachers, and a much firmer grip than there. And there it seemed to be very easy and happy-going. And our geography teacher especially then insisted that she was appalled we hadn't actually written a war diary. And thinking back now, this was Austria, a country that was taken over. And she felt, she must have been very patriotic in a way, we ought to have written this diary. And she made me borrow a diary from 1939 and from another girl. And I had to copy literally whatever she has said till I caught up in, I believe, in October 42 to 43, and then wrote this. We sort of looked for authentic news. It didn't tell you actually what happened to our family, but just gave the facts of news items as they came through the papers and the radio. Now, my family settled down in Austria.
Sorry, were you allowed to put anything you wanted? Or did you?
No, we just were told to record the news, the daily news, more or less giving the impression or giving the details, how the war developed in different areas and fronts, how we won the war, really.
Exactly.
It was sort of, we were told to say, well, we have gained here a little bit more land. We have destroyed, if you look at it, and that light, destroyed so many ships today, and we are making headway. We are winning. This was the idea, really.
What about losses and things like that?
Looking back now, I believe I would have recorded this as we read it.
Mm-hmm.
And I had various dates checked, and we did record, and here in the book I've got, the invasion of American troops in North Africa. And it was the same date. So, I mean, at that time, looking back after the war, I wondered whether this was authentic or not, because, after all, we might have just made up a date. But it did record this. The retreats were wrapped up very nicely in words one can find in this book, saying, well, we just had to collect our resources and things like that. But,
yeah.
I mean, this is all I remember because, after all, I mean, one didn't pay so much attention in one's teenage life to really what was going on. But I remember times became very hard because the rationing was very severe.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember maize appeared a lot at home. My mother, when she bought bread, for instance, was maize bread. And we lived, of course, in a rural area, so we had possibilities of getting potatoes. And towards the end of the war, trading in different things, either clothing, giving these to farmers and to get a sack of potatoes or apples, and so on, even in Austria. The war years, I suppose, were not so bad for me, but for my family in northern Germany and eastern Prussia, where most of my father's family was wiped out through the Russian campaign, and an aunt of mine perished terribly in Pomerania. She had two young sons, and she gave literally every scrap of food to them, and she died of hunger. And we managed to find the children after the war in Pomerania, in a Kinderheim, a home for children. And then another one of our relations went over in 1948 and got the children out. And of course, they didn't know their father at all. And of course, they're all grown up and happily settled now in Germany. It's just one side of the family. So in other words, the family that remained in northern Germany, it was terribly lucky we were sort of forced to move into Austria, had a dreadful time or did not survive. And
why were they picked? Well, they weren't picked upon, did they? I mean, how come their circumstances were so bad? It was just general?
Well, yes, you see, the fronts were advancing. I'm looking ahead now, 1943-44. And you had fighting in eastern Prussia, and you had fighting in Pomerania, and the Russian troops moved into Germany.
Mm.
And gradually up to the Oder, which is a river where Stettin is built on, line. And of course, it was war all around them, and firing and shelling and so on. And some people survived and some didn't. I remember in March 1945, my father suddenly rushed home. He was stationed, I think, in northern Yugoslavia, already on the front line almost. And he said, well, I'm off to Berlin. I've just got a command to go to Berlin and defend Berlin. And of course, that's only an hour's, was only an hour's journey, I should say, by train from Stettin, where my grandparents still lived, my mother's parents. And we had, of course, no mail going at that time. And my father's last words were, but look, I'm going to look them up if I can and try and get them out. Well, then we never heard another word between March 45 and February 46. We did not know whether my father survived the fight around Berlin. And his parting day was in Kumpendorf. He went to the station. My mother saw him off in the station. I stayed at home. And while they were getting the railway ticket, an air raid took place from, I think, British planes, and the station was heavily shelled. And after this was over, a friend of ours raced along to see whether my parents were still alive, because I didn't know. And it turned out that one of the shells penetrated my mother's coat down her arm, while my father held her, squeezed against the wall. And when this was over, about half an hour later, he took off for the front, and we didn't know what was happening to him, or didn't know what happened to him at all. So my mother came home very shattered and very shaken, and I remember she just had to rest. She was so. But my father left, and the next thing we knew, I should say it was about 4 months later, during the summer anyway, in 1945, suddenly my grandparents were outside our door. They just arrived. And my mother was absolutely shaken. She said, where on earth do you come from? They looked terrible. They had a 3 weeks' journey from Stettin down to Carinthia. Well, the story was that my father, who was sent into the sector outside Stettin to take over command, they managed to find them in their house. He managed this, and he found there were very few civilians left. And he said, well, look, you must come out. They said, well, where shall we go to? This is front line, and there's my mother down in Carinthia. And so he said, well, I send a befehl, an order, he said, that you come out. And this is the only way he got them out. And they were put on one of these terrible refugee trains, which actually were sort of sections of them went through Germany. And Germany in middle Germany, was split already. It was Thuringia. And they were trying to cut through there, the enemy lines. So they, for hours and sometimes days, stayed in one particular spot on this wretched train. And the conditions must have been awful for them. And they literally only had, I think, a sort of traveling bag full of belongings. And I always remember my grandmother having a great bunch of keys. And she said, well, these are the keys to this door and that door in my house and that door. And one day I shall go back and I shall be able to unlock it all. They were absolutely heartbroken and I think out of their minds. I don't think they ever really recovered from the shock. But there was my poor mother, my sister, myself, with my grandparents, her parents. She had to look after too. And of course, in May 45, the war ended. And the immediate reaction in the part of Austria where I lived was that all the Germans with German nationalities who had moved into Austria or had to move up to 1926 were listed, names and details. And the Austrian authorities said, well, you've come into here, you don't belong here, we are Austrians, out. And they were taken out of Austria, you see. And gradually they were listed. And we realized, and my mother must have been had a terrible time because she was on her own. She was a German national in Austria. And she didn't know where my father was. And at this time, in May, June 1945, all German savings and monies were confiscated or blocked, I should say. So her salary, which she had from the state, or my father's salary, her money from the state, was immediately cancelled or blocked. She didn't get another penny. Her bank account was blocked till things were sorted out between the Austrian and German authorities. There was no mail going at all between Germany and Austria. And she then literally said, thank God I've got a post office saving account, because I can't remember when, but during that summer, the post office gradually worked again and released monies. I know she couldn't draw perhaps a few hundred marks or whatever in one go, but a certain amount. And of course we had friends who helped, because otherwise how could she have lived, you see? And I remember living that summer on lots and lots of tomatoes, which we grew in the garden, and potatoes. I think that was probably the only food we had, because everything was just down. I also remember lots of German troops retreating from Italy and Yugoslavia, and people talking, oh, have you seen such and such a barn, because lots of German soldiers changed into civilian clothing and tried to escape. You see, they'd sort of retreated behind the lines. I also recall Tito's troops moving into Carinthia. In fact, we saw the blaze of fires up on the mountains coming over from Yugoslavia into Carinthia, where they sort of lit bonfires, and by hearsay, they said there were a lot of female troops there, women, looting along the way through the valleys from Yugoslavia into Carinthia. And I do know they reached Klagenfurt, but then there was some negotiation between the British troops and the Tito's troops, and they withdrew, because the trouble there has been from the First World War. The Yugoslavs had taken over sort of half the Lake Werther, Werthersee, and even now on the other side of the lake there is a stone commemorating the time where there was trouble after the First World War. And because Carinthia has quite a Slovenian influence of language, and I think the two nations sort of integrated there. I remember that. And then, of course, I can't recall very well the autumn 45. I suppose we just lived in hope of hearing something from my father, which we did not, till about February 1946, when apparently he had been taken a prisoner west of Berlin by British troops, and he was taken, sort of retreated into the northern province of Germany, Schleswig-Holstein, and he also, in this prison of war camp where he was, had a lot of Austrian nationals, and they were released first and sent back to Austria, and one of them took a note with him, and I remember it arriving, and it had a stamp Linz on it, and it said that my father was alive and he was in northern Germany, and we are just hoping to get the sort of postal services working before he will contact us again. But of course, unknown to him, the Austrians had rounded up all the German names, as I told you, and were repatriating Germans in what used to be goods trains or cattle trains, about 50 in one compartment. As they stood and took their hand luggage, they were taken back to Germany into camps, because the people in power then said, we don't want the Germans here, they have taken us over. Well, each family had a different reason for being there, and especially we and others had taken all their belongings. We hadn't acquired anything in Austria, but bought our own furniture, bought our own bank account, right into it, thinking we would be there forever. So it must have been a very worrying time for my parents. But actually in February 46, the time came when we were told we had to go back to Germany. But we couldn't go back to where we came from because that part was split. Germany was split in half. The Russians or the Polish people were there in Stettin. And our only thought at the time was, well, if my father was in the west and northern Germany, this is where we will have to go, you see, and start a new life. And I remember we were told to go through a camp in Spital an der Drau in Carinthia, and we were also told my grandparents would not qualify because they were old people and they were not interested to take them back. Well, as they had absolutely nothing and they were relying on us, we refused. My grandfather at that time was quite old and ill, and he could not be moved. And so my mother, I believe from December 45 to February 46, got a sort of reprieve that she wasn't going to be moved back. We didn't know where we would go. We still, at that time, didn't know where my father was. So because we had these certificates from doctors, we were told it's all right. But eventually, when the time came in February, we had to leave my grandmother with my grandfather, who was terribly ill, behind, and we didn't know how they would live, what money they would live on. And we had very kind friends who said, well, for God's sake, don't worry, you get back and get the family reunited and we'll take it from there. Well, I remember sometime in February we went to the station and we just had suitcases and one of those large traveling trunks. And we were put on this train, and there was lots and lots of other people. It was terribly, terribly cold in February over the Alps, and our destination was Munich. And we also had friends in Munich, because this was the American zone at the time. Germany was split into different zones, and we thought, well, if we reach Munich and stay with friends, it's some destination we could give. We didn't feel we wanted to stay in camps for years and years and years, through no fault of our own. And I remember it must have been a very long journey. I think it must have been 2 days before we reached Munich. We stood for ages in the town in the Alps, and it was bitterly cold. There was no heating, except one of this sort of stoves they had got, which now and then people put some coal into, but it was very bitterly cold. And these wagons were locked. You couldn't get out. They locked us in, practically. And I remember looking out, and I think my mother must have been very unhappy. And I wore a pair of boots, which were leather boots, up to my knees. This was the fashion at the time. And they were handmade and made to measure, and therefore it didn't leave a lot of room for circulation. And when we finally got to Munich, I could not get these boots off because my legs, even up to now, below the knee, sort of are very colored red, because these boots were so tight that it stopped circulation. It was so bitterly cold over the mountains. We sort of crept along over through tunnels in Bad Gastein, Hofgastein up there, that for days they couldn't get my boots off. They had to cut them and I had terrible frostbite. And in Munich, we stayed with a sculptor's family. They were friends. And, of course, it was all a matter of living and having to get ration cards. And in order to report to the local authorities, they said, well, we don't want you. We've got enough people to cope with. And if you have, you know, your husband is alive, they said to my mother, well, your best bet would be to go and try and make for the British zone. But to get to the British zone from the American zone, you had to have permission. And I believe at one time we had to travel via the French zone as well. It's very vague in my memory. And I remember, as I had English at school, my English was good enough that I could speak to various American authorities, trailing around with my mother from place to place to place for permission. It took hours and days, I believe. And then they decided we couldn't get onto this train, which got us into the British zone, until we again went through various camps. So I think we trailed through various camps in the American zone, always for a few days here and a few days there. And we finally got on a train. I think it was it's very dim in my mind. It must have been a terrible journey because hundreds of other people were in there too. And you were just sort of shepherded along like cattle in a way. And I remember getting to Lübeck, and my father was waiting for us at the station. And he said, "Well, here you are." And we hardly recognized him because he had lost so much weight. He was then released. He wasn't a prisoner of war anymore. And he said, "Well, we have to start a new life," which was very, very difficult as things sort of became halfway normal, which took, I think, between 2 years after the war. It was a terrible time because not only were we there, but all the refugees from Eastern Germany had come over too, and Lübeck was even now just on the border between East and West. You had hundreds and thousands milling around in camps and otherwise. And I think my father then decided he had enough years in the police force. He was going to retire and had a decent pension at the time, but they just had to start completely again. You see, looking back, that my mother, as I said, didn't get married because of the first inflation in 1923. She put getting married off a few years. Because they lost everything, they were faced with this again. Well, having reached Lübeck, I believe, sometime in 1946, and I think it must have been May, my parents tried to sort of settle down again, and once again we had to, by the authorities made us go through a sort of camp where all the refugees were gathered. This was right down on the river Trave, very next to an old fishing village, and where some temporary accommodation was put up. And I think my parents caught up in all the events. My mother heard how my father had been taken a prisoner of war in Mecklenburg, west of Berlin, and been put into this sort of prisoner of war reserve, as it was called at the time. He had lost tremendous amount of weight. He was very, very thin. We hardly recognized him. And then I believe, looking back, my parents decided to go into some sort of business. My mother, at one time when she was very young, after the First World War, stayed with relations who owned a hotel in Pomerania, and she underwent very good training as cook and hotel management. And strangely enough, even at that time, one had to have qualifications, which she had. She had some certificates. Because as you know, in Germany, you for any trade or any office work, you will have either a period of apprenticeship, 2 years or 3 years. You then make your exams and you go in front of the Chamber of Commerce and pass. And then you sort of carry on your normal business life. Everything is regulated by tariffs. In other words, if you're in the office, you know exactly after how many years you should earn at that time. Anyway, so and so much. Or in public service. So my mother decided to look into the catering side of the riding school in Lübeck. And at that time, it was reasonably small, but mainly business people tried to carry out, have riding lessons and carry on with their old life. These were the old Lübecker people who hadn't lost much, perhaps just maintained their property and try to get on with their normal life as one could possibly go on, because Lübeck was a town which had hundreds and thousands of refugees coming from the east. But it helped the business people, who had still got their businesses tremendously, because they became quite prosperous.
Lübeck, is it a port?
Lübeck is an old Hanseatic town. It's east of Hamburg on the Baltic Sea. It has, I imagine, 300 or 400,000 inhabitants, if not more nowadays. And it's one of the old free Hanseatic towns. And it's beautiful with its old houses and for trade and town gates and so on. But it was almost swallowed up by refugees after the war.
Had there been much damage, bomb damage?
I believe they had one very bad air raid during the war, which had damaged quite a bit. But they have rebuilt the old houses in old style where they could. And